This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, July 16th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we take a look at the data surrounding the increasingly severe wildfire seasons in the West with a CU researcher who was one of the first scientists to study the health impacts of wildfire smoke. Advocates for affordable housing have some ideas of what to do with the $64 million Boulder County will receive from the American Rescue Plan. And we'll bring you the latest edition of Trends Diary. At 8:30 this morning, Connections comes your way. Today, their guests are members of the local faith community who have been working on a variety of gun violence prevention measures. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative, an eclectic mix of music until noon. And now, we'll start with the headlines. Denver is facing a shortage of trash collectors, leading to delays in the removal of solid waste at residential and commercial sites. It's part of a nationwide shortage of workers in sectors requiring licensed commercial drivers. The Denver Post reports that last month, the city received more than 1,700 calls about missed garbage pickups. Here in Boulder, the same shortage of licensed commercial drivers is affecting school bus service for the upcoming academic year. A federal grand jury in Denver has indicted the former CEO of DaVita, a medical services provider, on two counts of conspiracy. The charges allege former CEO Kent 30 and DaVita colluded with other competing firms to not hire each other's senior staff, thereby freezing top employees out of job opportunities and violating antitrust laws. In a Department of Justice press release, the assistant director of the FBI's Washington field office said the charges, quote, show a disturbing pattern of behavior among healthcare company executives to conspire to limit the opportunities of workers. Kidney dialysis company DaVita is one of the largest employers in the Denver area. In a statement to 9 News Denver, the company expressed confidence the charges would not result in a conviction. Colorado may have a problem with what are known as forever chemicals. That's according to an analysis released this week. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
On Wednesday, the Nonprofit Environmental Working Group, EWG, released an analysis from federal data on industries that make, use, and discharge PFAS, perfluorical and polyfluorical substances. PFAS are considered forever chemicals. PFAS chemicals are man-made, non-stick, waterproof, stain-resistant compounds used in things like carpets and firefighting foam. Health issues linked to PFAS are cancer, birth defects, weakened immunity, and kidney trouble. EGW's analysis of the federal data shows PFAS may be released from tens of thousands of facilities across the country, like sewage treatment plants, electronic parts factories, and car washes. According to a 2020 Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment survey, a few of Colorado's 501 sites shows PFAS chemicals possibly being released at a car wash in Monument, a sewage treatment facility in Fort Collins, and a chemical factory in Greeley. The EPA is considering setting regulatory limits for forever chemicals, and Congress has proposed setting discharge limits for clean water standards, which is part of the bipartisan infrastructure investment that has passed the House. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
An air quality advisory is in effect for the Front Range due to smoke from ongoing wildfires. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has advised residents to remain indoors if smoke becomes so thick that it affects visibility beyond 5 miles. We'll have more on the effects of wildfire smoke on human health after the headlines. The advisory remains in effect until mid-morning. The Boulder Creek Festival is back, kicking off today in Boulder's Central Park. The festival kicks off today and runs through the weekend, featuring live music and performances, children's activities, a market, and more. The annual festival is usually held in May, but was postponed this year as a public health precaution. Today's forecast from the National Weather Association shows we are looking at a high in the low 90s, with mostly sunny skies and through the next several days. Lows in the mid-60s with a slight chance of rain tonight. Right now, outside our Boulder studios, it's 62 degrees. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Does it seem like the air pollution from wildfires is worse than ever? Well, it is. KGNU's Hannah Lee Myers spoke with Colleen Reed, assistant professor of geography at CU Boulder, about her research into air pollution from wildfires and the dramatic changes in data she's seen since beginning her work.
I started researching wildfire smoke and health just after the 2008 fires in California. I was working at the EPA in San Francisco, and they were getting some calls from folks complaining about the smoke. And I was asked, as someone who researches health impacts of air pollution, to investigate it. And at the time, I found that there was some research that showed a relationship, but I thought that the research could be improved upon. So I started with those fires in 2008. They were considered a very large wildfire event at the time. They have been completely dwarfed by the past few summers for wildfires in the western U.S. in terms of duration and air pollution levels and numbers of people exposed to really poor air quality from the wildfires. But starting with that work, you know, from my work as well as the work of others that's been increasing over this period of time, there's very clear evidence of impacts to the respiratory system in the human body. So more people are showing up to emergency rooms or being hospitalized for asthma or complications of other lung disease. And then there's been some growing evidence that it's impacting other parts of the body to these higher air pollution events. So there's some evidence that there's impacts to the cardiovascular system. I've done some work where we've looked at birth outcomes. We found that babies who gestate during higher pollution events such as wildfires can be lower birth weight on average than they would be compared to babies that did not gestate during the wildfires. And then there's some interest in looking at other outcomes as well related to other systems in the body. But that's work that's still ongoing.
And what changes have you seen in the data since you started doing this type of research?
Yeah, there's a lot of changes in the data on the air quality. But when I was looking at the 2008 fires, what I realized was that, you know, we were reliant on monitors that are placed mostly in urban areas. And so I was trying to get as much data as I could, and I found that the Forest Service had put out some extra monitors, as well as, I was in California at the time, the California Air Resources Board had put out some, just to understand the concentrations in different places than they normally measure in. And I got that data. And at the time, I talked with some of the people who had put out these monitors about the data and the quality of the data, and was told, you know, you should throw out values over 400 micrograms per meter cubed, because that must mean that the monitor is malfunctioning. And to tell you the truth, there were monitors where it was clear that it did malfunction. There were monitors that got burned up in fires. But at the time, you know, the concentrations that we saw from those fires were considered to be unprecedented at the time. You know, we had a lot of measures in the 200 microgram per meter cubed versus the past few wildfire seasons. You know, we've seen things, you know, in the 500s. And so the air pollution from the fires in the past couple of seasons have really dwarfed these ones that I was studying from 2008. And so I think in addition, it'll be really interesting once we get the results of studies on these more recent fires, because the concentrations were much higher, the exposure durations were longer, and therefore, you know, there might be maybe more of a signal for health impacts than we had in previous fires. We might see some, you know, some associations with health outcomes that we hadn't seen before.
So tell us, how does the toxicity of wildfire smoke compare with other, perhaps more discussed forms of pollution, like urban and industrial pollution?
It's not a settled question in the science yet. There are a couple of papers, not my own, that have come out in the past year that have said that there is maybe a steeper dose response effect for wildfire smoke than other sources of fine particulate matter. And the chemical composition, for sure, is different between the different fuels that are being burned, as well as the, you know, the temperature of the burn effects, the chemistry, all sorts of things. There's also chemistry effects as the plume ages, as it moves downwind. There's, you know, chemical reactions happening in the air that affect the type of particles that you're exposed to in different places. Whether or not that changes what we see for health is still an open question. And so we need to do more research to know more whether or not they affect health differently, or particles from combustion are the same regardless of the source in terms of health.
And what suggestions do you have for those of us who are being exposed to these unprecedented levels of wildfire smoke here in the West?
Yeah, I would say being aware of what the air pollution levels are where you are is really important. So you can look at the EPA's air quality index. There's also state or local websites that will have that information. And the precautions that I would recommend are trying to find times during the day where the air quality is better to spend time outside. When the air quality is bad, to stay indoors and try and keep your windows and doors closed, because the air pollution will seep in any way it can. Another, HEPA filters are quite good at cleaning the air inside your home. Make sure to get ones that are true HEPA filters and not ionizers. The ionizers can create ozone, which is another air pollutant of concern. If you don't have a HEPA filter, you can't get one. Spending more time indoors in places that have a good HVAC system that has good filters. And you can also replace the filter in your home more frequently, because it will get filled up with particles when there's really bad air quality. So checking it to make sure it, you know, it's clean, and if not, replace it.
And what about masks? Can they help in any way if you do go outside or have to work outside?
N95, that is, you know, well fitted to your face, can help. It'll do a better job than, say, a surgical mask of stopping the air around you to get into your mask. But surgical masks, they've actually found, can protect a little bit, but it's much less than an N95. Anyone who has facial hair, it won't do a very tight seal, so you'll still be getting sort of air coming through. So if you can do a good shave beforehand, then the mask will fit better, and it'll be better at protecting you from the air quality.
This week, Together Colorado released a report and series of recommendations on affordable housing, along with the East County Housing Opportunity Coalition. The organizations want a portion of the tens of millions of dollars Boulder County is to receive from the American Rescue Plan to go towards permanently affordable housing. Earlier this week, I spoke with Megan Carrier, Deputy Director of Together Colorado, outside of the Sister Carmen Community Center, just after the public presentation of their report.
The main takeaways are, we know there's a lot of good work happening right now in the crisis of the pandemic, and there's state funds that are being put forward to that. But we see what's needed for Boulder County and really across the state is investments in long-term systemic housing change, so that not only next year, but in 5 years and 10 years, folks have accessible housing, and that we have a multiracial, multi-ethnic group of folks who continue to live here and have access.
And a lot of times in Boulder, people say, well, the height limits, you know, we can't really build up, and the green belt, we can't really build out. Is it really possible to expand affordable housing in Boulder County?
Yes, that's the exciting part. When we brought all these different groups together, service, advocacy, community members who are impacted, we came up with ideas that can push the limits of what we've been doing to push across the status quo. So for example, one great idea could be a housing trust fund. So the idea would be some money could be seeded from these federal funds, from the American Rescue Plan Act funds, and then cities could also help help put forward, put money in there to sustain it. And then projects could be done. So you could do land trust. You could have innovative ideas come out of that, different types of apartments and duplexes, and so different pieces. We are asking cities and counties to look at what are some of the zoning codes that exist? What are barriers? What are useful? What could we do differently? And so there are just different innovative things that we have access to within our own community.
And as far as hard numbers go, in the executive summary of this report, mentions that in the coming months, Boulder County will receive $64 million from the American Rescue Plan, while the city of Boulder will receive $20 million, Longmont $12 million. Are these funds already earmarked, or what would you like to see done with these funds?
Yes. So the beauty of the county and city funds is that they're not stipulated on how we need to use the money. And so the state will be investing in some more short-term crisis situations. So we're asking the county without, since they don't have the same strings attached, they can be creative with how they use their funds, cities as well. So we're asking them to use a portion of that $64 million to invest in long-term housing projects.
In asking around about why are things so expensive throughout the Front Range, really, why are they so expensive? I was told about these local or these statewide preemption laws that prevent rent control, but my understanding is that was just done away with in this last legislative session. What are some of the moves going on now on the ground to kind of hit the ground running within this framework of newly passed laws?
Great. So actually, rent control is still illegal in the state of Colorado. We're going to work hard to get rid of that exemption. However, inclusionary zoning was passed this past legislative session. So that overturned the Telluride decision several years ago. So now cities and counties have the ability to create different kinds of zoning. Basically, when developers come in and create new developments for rentals, they can now have them have a proportion of that be for affordable housing. So the cities now have tools in their toolboxes to say, we do want some of our new development to be X number of affordable housing units. What's great is every city is different in Colorado. The Western Slope is different than Boulder. And so cities can decide what works best for them. So that is a barrier that's been diminished with this past legislative session. However, it won't happen on its own. Communities have to organize. Just because we're able to do it doesn't mean we will. And so communities need to organize and ask their city officials and counties to say, we want this. We want X percentage of folks or the area median income, we want it to be at 30% or 80%. So folks have the ability to fight for that.
And do you see on the federal level any sort of expansion of federal housing vouchers?
There, I mean, right now, the Biden administration is trying to invest more money at the federal level and to create more opportunities for states to have the ability to expand. We're hopeful. What's often hard in our communities in Colorado, though, is we could get more vouchers if we had that resource, but often there's not housing. So we often don't have landlords who have Section 8, or there's just a long list. So both needing the resources, but also needing the actual homes for people to live in is kind of the opportunity here.
And speaking of barriers, oftentimes something that can be really, really hard for people who are in need of housing assistance is learning how to navigate the system. What resources are out there to assist people in getting through that bureaucratic maze?
Now, that's a great question, and it's actually one of the recommendations we have in our report. So there are great places like Sister Carmen, EFA, and Boulder County. There's hotlines, but often, you know, folks either sometimes because of they're scared because of their immigration status or just they can't sit on the phone for a long time, just don't know what's out there. And so what we're asking as part of our recommendations is that there's money invested in like a hub or like an ombudsman, someone who folks know to go to and can support in getting the information out to communities bilingually and, you know, culturally appropriate in our different communities. So we do see a lack. There's a lot of good resources out there, and yet it's not meeting the folks who need them right now.
So what would you tell somebody who might be listening who is saying, you know what, I'm spending more than half of my income on rent. I could really use some of that assistance if it's out there, $64 million. What do I need to do to get some help?
Yes. So I would say there's a few things. One, definitely if you're in need of resources in the immediate moment, there's a hotline in Boulder County and then in other cities, depending where you live, to find resources. But in the long term of how do we actually make it so you don't always have to be looking for resources, trying to find that next month's rent, I would recommend folks call their county commissioners, they call their city council folks, and tell them that you need them to invest in long-term housing. So this could be solutions around how do we create more affordable housing? How is it at the lowest level? So like 30% area medium income. How do we get more folks housed long-term? How are we investing in land trusts or a housing fund? And there's groups like Together Colorado, like ECHO, who are organizing people right now on the ground to make this change. We work at the city level, we work at the state level, and we want folks who are in this pain who can come out and say, you're not alone, and we can actually move policy together. Because that's really what, at the end of the day, we've got to change policy.
Anything else you'd like to add that I didn't touch on with my questions?
Just thank you for this opportunity. And really, what we believe is that all folks, no matter what you look like, where you come from, or what's in your wallet, everyone deserves a safe, sustainable place to live and to call home.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Miss Shirley, and I love reading books. There are times when I feel lonely and different and isolated and uncertain. But I often meet somebody on the pages of a book who provides me with comfort or encouragement. And that's when I start to realize that some of the characters on those pages are real people walking around me in my day-to-day life. And that encourages me to introduce myself so I don't feel so alone. The only thing I love more than reading books is reading books to children. That's why I host Drag Queen Storytime with Miss Shirley at libraries all over Boulder County. There are hundreds of great children's stories that deal with characters realizing they are somehow different, going back as far as The Ugly Duckling. Books that show us how characters have struggled through that conflict and how they eventually grow to live as their authentic self. And if there is a unicorn or a narwhal along the way, all the better. I also love to introduce families to stories they haven't heard before, like Perfectly Norman by Tom Percival. It's about a little boy who grows a pair of wings, but he's unsure how people in his life will respond to them. So he covers them up with a coat. But when he does, he soon realizes he can't do all the things he wants to do. So he blames his wings, when really it's the coat that is the problem. My goal is to celebrate and encourage inclusion and diversity. There are different types of people in the world and different ways to live your life. And just because they are different doesn't mean they are bad or wrong. If we don't get to know people who are different from ourselves, how can we make a human connection? I love that story. Glitter kisses.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
And that does it for today's edition of The Morning Magazine on 88.5 KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Thank you for joining us today. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for Connections.
We're Eve and Michael of Harlequin Gardens Sustainable Nursery. And we support KGNU because, like a good garden, it's vibrant, colorful, diverse, and nutrient-dense.
Support comes from the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, a proud partner of the public broadcasting stations that keep Coloradans better informed.